From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Monday edition, most congregations around the world gathered in non-traditional ways yesterday to celebrate Resurrection Sunday. They were attempting to abide by government meeting restrictions, which are aimed at slowing the spread of the coronavirus. However, some elected officials like Louisville Mayor Greg Fisher and Greenville Mayor Eric Simmons went to extremes, putting special restrictions on worshipers. The courts are already stepping in some jurisdictions, and it doesn't look good for those who are hostile to the First Amendment. Mike Ferris, President and CEO of Alliance Defending Freedom, will join me here a little bit later. And on Friday, I asked Vice President Mike Pence about this growing concern and asked him if the Justice Department would look into these violations of the First Amendment. On Saturday night, a DOJ spokesman tweeted, AG Barr is monitoring government regulations of religious services. While social distancing policies are appropriate during this emergency, they must be applied even-handedly and not single out religious organizations. Expect action from DOJ next week, end quote. Well, stand by. We'll talk more about that. And in a related story, if churches can't meet and elective surgery centers are prohibited from operating, why should abortion clinics be open? That's the question Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry is asking. He'll join me here on Washington Watch in just a moment. And what are some of the ways churches are creatively communicating to their members and the watching world during these trying times? We'll talk about that later here on this Monday edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you happen to be on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. And by the way, folks, if you do not have the Stand Firm app, I encourage you to go to the App Store and get the Stand Firm app. You can not only can you listen to Washington Watch on your smartphone with the Stand Firm app, but you can also be alerted to issues that you need to know about and take action. And we'll direct you via the Stand Firm app. Go to the App Store, get the Stand Firm app for your smartphone. All right, amid the effort to clear the way for the medical response to the coronavirus patients, all non-essential medical surgery centers were told to close until the crisis had passed. That way, the needed equipment could be directed to the response of the coronavirus. It would also eliminate as much as possible taking up ICU beds for potential non-essential surgeries that had complications. Well, that included abortion clinics. But despite the order, abortion clinics in Louisiana continue to operate. The Louisiana Attorney General has launched an investigation to see if, in fact, these clinics throughout Louisiana are performing non-essential procedures and are only performing non-essential procedures, and in whether or not they're violating the statewide stay-at-home order. Joining me now to talk more about this is the Attorney General of the state of Louisiana, Jeff Landry. Attorney General Landry, welcome to Washington Watch.
Good afternoon, Tony. Always a pleasure to be with you and all you great listeners.
Well, let's start with defining some terms as I was stumbling over them at the opening here. Non-essential procedures, what are we talking about here?
Well, of course, those would be considered elective procedures, or those procedures under which, you know, the patient could, you know, theoretically wait out until the public health care crisis has passed. You know, we're seeing that, you know, take colonoscopies, for instance. So, you know, I'm getting ready to turn 50 this year, and you know, the advice from my doctor would be to go and have a colonoscopy. Well, you know, I should probably wait, you know, and of course that I should, not only should I wait, but the center under which I would go to have that colonoscopy should tell me that, look, this is, you know, more of an elective and non-emergency procedure, and we're not going to perform that procedure until the public health care crisis has passed.
Now, there's a few reasons for this. Number one, and I think you've stated this publicly, it's so that the personal protective equipment can be directed, which is in short supply, can be directed to the frontline healthcare workers that are working with the coronavirus patients. Is that correct?
That's correct. You know, we all know that there's an extreme shortage of PPE or personal protective equipment, you know, mostly because most of that equipment is made overseas in Asia or China, and our supply chain has been affected by this global pandemic. And of course, the responsible thing, and you've seen it, look, you're like dentist offices have closed and they haven't given us any trouble in closing because they recognize some of them have even donated their PPE to nearby hospitals in order to ensure that those hospitals have an adequate supply as we deal with COVID-19, you know, the Wuhan flu. And so, all of this is in an effort to reserve the equipment necessary to protect the medical providers. I mean, because God bless our medical providers right now, Tony. I mean, they're on the front lines of this war against this invisible enemy, and we should be doing everything we can to ensure their protection.
Another aspect of this is that, even though it's a standard, procedure, you say colonoscopy or other elective surgery or procedure, these things can go wrong. And that would require them going to a hospital and potentially taking up an ICU bed or other equipment that is necessary to focus on the current crisis with the coronavirus patient. So it's all designed to focus all of our effort and energy and resources into this one thing and stop it. We also have the stay-at-home order. So we're trying to do everything we can. That would include abortion clinics, which in Louisiana, and I know this for a fact because I first passed the legislation to put them under the same regulatory system as the ambulatory surgical centers, which are the outpatient centers. So they fall under the same order as everybody else. Is that not correct?
That's right. And, you know, that's the concerning part, Tony, is that, you know, for some reason, the abortion industry believes that they're above the law. They're in a different class of healthcare than everyone else. It really is disappointing. Of course, it's not unusual that they would not do the right thing. But, you know, like all other clinics around the country and in the state of Louisiana, they should be following those same types of protocols and abiding by those executive orders.
Now, last week in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, Texas had put in a similar order that non-essential medical procedures be stayed, including abortion clinics. They appealed that at the district level, went up to the circuit level, and the Fifth Circuit ruled in favor of the state of Texas, saying that, yes, it's reasonable during this emergency situation to put this restriction in place. Now, I think you also filed a friend of the court brief in that case supporting Texas, the state of Texas's position, did you not?
Yeah, Solicitor General's office, headed by Liz Murrow, and we actually filed another one last night. So, yes, this is the second time the Texas orders are before the Fifth Circuit, and we've led an amici. We led it in the original one, and then we just led it again, filing it late last night on Easter Sunday, supporting Texas's position that, you know, healthcare is part of the policing powers of the state, and that under these public healthcare crisis times that the state should be able to regulate all of our healthcare clinics, including abortion clinics. And again, this goes back to this abortion distortion that, you know, the industry believes that they're above the law and that they're, you know, there's a carve out and exception unique just unto them.
Mm-hmm. So you have launched an investigation now into whether or not these clinics are operating, even though they're not supposed to be. Is that correct?
Right. Normally this would, these types of actions would be taken by the Louisiana Department of Health. But, you know, because of, Louisiana's continual response to, the COVID-19 crisis, their resources are stretched thin. They reached out to us, asked us if we could assist them. We created a COVID-19 task force to look into any complaints that may come to them. And so we were able to secure a couple of investigators from the state medical board and put together a good group of experts that went out and started gathering facts. And we submitted reports on the investigations that we did on Good Friday, and we submitted that to the Louisiana Department of Health on yesterday, and for them to be able to review the evidence that we gathered and to make a decision.
So the evidence that you gathered, does it suggest that these clinics are violating the order not to be performing these non-essential procedures?
Well, you know, Tony, I hate to not answer questions, but, you know, unfortunately, because we're in this investigative stage and we sent this report over to the Louisiana Department of Health, it's the facts that are in front of them, really, it's their determination to make. Here's what I would tell you is that, look, you know, what we want to ensure is that basically, well, I'll give you one example. We know that, and this is public knowledge, right? This isn't coming from our investigators, but we know that based upon the traffic and the cars that are in and out of these abortion clinics, that there are people that are walking into those clinics from out of state. Okay, that's problematic, right? I mean, we have seen states across the country basically start to restrict access into their states at their particular borders or their state lines for people going in and out of their particular states. That's one thing that certainly is problematic for what's going on at those particular clinics. What we want to do is ensure that, again, all healthcare clinics don't create like a super highway that is conducive to creating a super highway that would be conducive for communicable diseases. We want to ensure that clinics around Louisiana that are operating, if they are operating inside of those executive orders and are doing so in a manner that's creating an additional public health care crisis inside of one already.
Right. So this now rests, and it's with the administration, but essentially that would then be the governor has the responsibility now for his administration to act upon the findings of your investigation.
That's right. The document, yeah. We can't draw conclusions. Those have to be drawn by medical personnel, which, you know, would be inside the Office of Public Health and Louisiana Department of Health, which are all underneath the governor. So, yes, it's their decision now. And of course, you know, whatever, when they make that particular decision and any legal action that's taken based upon those decisions, then will come to us and then we'll handle them. But, yeah, we've done our job. It's now inside of the Louisiana Department of Health to make a decision based upon the evidence that we've gathered.
All right. General Landry, we will we'll check back with you once a decision has been made, or even if it doesn't get made, we'll check back with you to see how things stand in the state of Louisiana. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Tony. We hope that a decision is imminent, though.
Within 48 hours?
Yeah, well, I'd like to see it a lot sooner than that, but we'll go ahead and give it 48 because that's what you want.
All right. Very good. All right, Jeff, good to talk with you, my friend. Take care.
Thank you.
All right, folks, don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch right on the other side of this break with Mike Ferris from ADF. Is historic masculinity lost forever? Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in a culture of gender confusion? We need men to be men, tough with compassionate strength, bent toward justice without compromise, locking arms and standing. We need to be the men God created us to be and fight for all that is right, true, and just. This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference. To find out more, go to standcourageous.com. This conference is led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will invest in you, helping you understand your role as a defender, a provider, an instructor, a battle buddy, and a chaplain so that you can have the generational influence that God has designed you to have. Learn more at StandCourageous.com. That's StandCourageous.com.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast called Lecture Me was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Again, the website, TonyPerkins.com. And be sure and get the Stand Firm app, where you can take us with you in your pocket anywhere you go. All right, we're going to continue our conversation regarding the topic of the abortion clinics, Planned Parenthood. Texas Planned Parenthood is appealing to the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn Governor Greg Abbott's order to stop elective abortions during the pandemic. And we just talked about that with Attorney General Jeff Landry, who is just submitted his report to the governor here in Louisiana regarding the clinics operating. The Fifth Circuit, which is the same circuit in which Louisiana is in, had upheld the order by the governor. But Planned Parenthood, I believe last night, filed with the U.S. Supreme Court as to the fact that abortion should be seen as an essential service. We're also going to take a look at the update on the arrest of our good friend David Benham, who was on the program a little bit later, because Alliance Defending Freedom is representing him. We're also going to talk about churches and what happened over the weekend. And join me to talk about all of that is the president, CEO, and general counsel of ADF, Mike Ferris. Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Always good to be with you.
Well, you guys were busy over the weekend, which was evident with everything popping. I want to start with Texas and Planned Parenthood appealing to the Supreme Court for abortion to be seen as an essential service and overturn the order of Governor Abbott.
Yeah, it's another chapter in what's called abortion distortion. The normal rules of law that are supposed to apply to everybody equally don't apply in the abortion context, according to some people. And the Fifth Circuit did a great job of saying no. The governor is within his prerogatives here and has treated you equally to others. And so, I think that that we we'll see what the Supreme Court does about it. I think that they will do something. I think that they'll take it seriously and take a look at it. There are four pro-abortion minded judges, generally speaking, on the court, and that's enough to get them to look at it. So I think they probably will look at the case.
So what would that look like if they do take up the case? Would they just stay the order from the Fifth Circuit and allow them to allow the abortion clinics to continue until they look at the overarching issue?
That's possible. It's possible that they will, you know, they could take the case without issuing a stay and just say, you know, you guys sort it out after it's done. And, you know, if Planned Parenthood feels like they've had their rights violated, they could sue for money damages like other people can. And then the next doctrine is whether that's clearly established law or not before you can sue a state government successfully for damages in the civil rights context. You have to prove that the law was clearly established. And I don't, you know, anything in the COVID-19 context is not clearly established. So the chances of them actually getting money from the state of Texas in this would be on the low side.
But because this is short-lived and that, you know, probably 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks,
yeah,
we're beyond this, will they still want to litigate this in court? Because I'm afraid they may not like the outcome, because I think clearly, as you've pointed out, they want to be treated, you know, specially, differently than everybody else. And the court may see the facts for what they are and say, no, you fall into the category of every other outpatient surgical center.
Yeah, I think that, you know, this is going to be a close call as to how it will come out. But I'm hopeful that the Supreme Court will say, no, just, you know, take your place in line. If you want to continue to litigate this afterwards, I mean, any business that has its doors closed by this can, you know, could litigate now. Chances of you winning are pretty slim. But if you contend that you were treated unfairly and unequally, you always have a shot at suing. In this context, it's a very difficult suit. But they could contend that in a later case. So it doesn't totally foreclose them pursuing at a later date.
But I think for them, the downside would be if they go ahead and they litigate this and the courts rule that, yes, this is not an essential medical service, that's the total opposite of what the abortion clinic wants to hear.
Yeah, yeah. They're taking a pretty big risk for a very short period of time. But it's, they've done the calculations and they think they've got a shot. Or they wouldn't be doing this if they didn't think they had a shot.
Well, we'll see what happens there. The court should make a decision here very soon. But let's move on to another COVID-related case. North Carolina, we had our good friend David Benham on the week before last after he was out at an abortion clinic abiding by the quote-unquote social distancing guidelines, a handful of people out there keeping distance apart, hand sanitizer, the whole nine yards. Abortion clinic was operating. People were going in for abortions. His nonprofit ministry doing sidewalk counseling. He's arrested. You're representing him now, correct?
We are, yeah. We we're in the early stages of the litigation of that right now, where I would anticipate a federal civil rights lawsuit in the next couple of days on this. You know, unless the city backs down, that's where we're headed. That's the bottom line. I hope so.
I think
this
is one of those cases, and we're going to talk about, we're about up against a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about a case in Mississippi that you are also handling, where the mayor in Greenville, Mississippi, telling the police to ticket parishioners at a drive-in service at the church. These are the cases where I'm so glad, there's many cases, but these in particular, that we have lawyers like yourself that I think should punish those that are trying to take away fundamental freedoms. I would hope that the courts would see this for what it is, an attack on these fundamental freedoms. Mike, hang with us. We're up against a break. We're going to come back, and I want you to tell us about what's happening in Greenville, Mississippi, and elsewhere. That's not the only place that took place over the weekend. So, Mike, thanks so much. Stick with us, folks. Stay with us. Mike Ferris, who is the president, CEO, and general counsel of Alliance Defending Freedom. He's going to give us a rundown on the churches. There weren't a lot, but there were some where you had these overly zealous elected officials trampling upon the first freedom. Now, you've heard me say I'm all for abiding by the guidelines. But as pastors became creative in continuing to get the message out, you had officials trampling on that first freedom. We can't have that. Mike Ferris is here next. Stick with us. We're back with more.
What are you reading this spring? At FRCblog.com, we have timely and original commentary on the issues facing our culture today. Our blog is written by our policy experts, the Family Research Council team, and outside contributors. On our blog, you can read about a wide variety of topics, including religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture. Some of our most recent blog posts include, "To abandon the nuclear family ideal is to abandon being human." "Why does the abortion industry hate women?" "China uses coronavirus to oppress religious minorities," and many more. At Family Research Council, our mission is to advance faith, family, and freedom in the culture by helping you to live out your faith and to stand for truth. With our blog, we hope to help you do that. Stay informed and get the resources you need at FRCblog.com. Again, that's FRCblog.com.
The Fairness for All Act was recently introduced to the House of Representatives after the passage of the Equality Act. In response, FRC has come out with a new publication, The Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. Despite having the best intentions, it is an ill-advised and poorly drafted bill that does not achieve its goal. If this act is passed into law, it would allow the federal government to impose a belief system and ideology about sexual behavior and identity on all Americans. The Fairness for All Act would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. To access this resource and to learn more, go to frc.org/fairnessforall. That's frc.org/fairnessforall.
My guest, Mike Ferris, President, CEO, and General Counsel of Alliance Defending Freedom. And as I mentioned in the previous segment, a busy weekend for them. They're dealing with the abortion cases in Texas, Planned Parenthood, appealing to the Supreme Court the order from the governor of Texas saying non-essential medical services to be shut down. They're dealing with that, also dealing with our good friend David Benham in North Carolina, but also popping around the country last week as churches starting to think creatively of how they could meet abiding by government guidelines, ran into some, I don't know, be careful how I describe it, but I would say just these hostile religious, hostile to religious freedom. Officials like the Mayor Simmons in Greenville, Mississippi, and ADF is now representing churches there on the ground. So, Mike, give us an update on what's happening there in Mississippi.
This church is a small church in Greenville, and as I understand it, there's a number of their members that don't have the technology that allows them to watch online. And so the pastor came up with the idea of drive-in church where, you know, access to a low-powered FM broadcaster, which is a simple thing that you can get, perfectly legal.
Right.
And he can broadcast, go not very much further than the
about church a city block.
People, yeah, about a city block. Sit in the church parking lot, listen to the sermon, and be together. All in your cars, nobody getting out of their cars, but you can see each other and have a sense of community. And down the street, same area of town, there's a Sonic drive-in. It's okay for them to have more cars there to get hamburgers delivered, and people roll the windows down. You know, there's more direct contact with the Sonic than there is with the church. And so when they 2 weeks ago on Palm Sunday, they handed out tickets to $500 each to every person that was there. And we sued them on Friday, and we worked out an agreement that they would not enforce it on Easter Sunday. But to be discussed again today, and today the city's hardened their back and they said, no, we're going to go at it. And so if the churches are going to continue to meet, they will be continued subject to fine. So we're going after a temporary restraining order now in Mississippi. The Attorney General of the United States has indicated that the Justice Department is going to be filing a statement of interest in the case, which means we've got the Justice Department saying the town of Mississippi's got it all wrong. They are violating religious freedom. So we very much welcome the high-level intervention by the Attorney General's office on this case.
Yeah, in fact, on Friday, I had the vice president on the program. And I've got a clip of our conversation about this particular case. Play that clip number three. I would encourage you, I know the Justice Department is on this, but as evidence emerges that there may have been some that went too far in singling out religious institutions, that that's something that's addressed in the days ahead. Because while we're all in this together, these fundamental freedoms must be defended and protected here at home, because it does have implications for what we do abroad as well. And then, of course, on Saturday, Carrie Kupik with the Department of Justice put out, AG Barr is monitoring government regulations of religious services. While social distancing policies are appropriate during this emergency, they must be applied even-handedly and not single out religious organizations. Expect action from DOJ next week. This clearly is a case that you just explained where it is not applied even-handedly.
That's right. And was another city that started off in Wilmington, North Carolina, and this one I actually intervened with the city attorney and sent him. I analyzed the North Carolina governor's order and looked at it in context of what was happening in the city of Wilmington, North Carolina. And to their credit, the city attorney changed the policy. They said, no, we understand. We're going to let the churches. They made some recommendations to the churches to make it as safe as possible, which was, well received. And, so if you start off on this path with good intention, but you get it wrong, you can change. Like, it shows that the one city did change, and that they're to be praised. But the others, we understand that, a few others had the same thing. Well, one town in Tennessee, 12 hours before Easter service, issued an edict. And, that's just way over the top. And
But it has a chilling effect. It has a chilling effect because I actually partnered with the local pastors here in my hometown, and we did one Sunday. We had a drive-in service. But people were calling me saying, well, I heard in Mississippi they were writing tickets to people. Can we do this? So it has a chilling effect upon people exercising their religious freedom. So what can be done to send a message to these overly zealous, religiously hostile elected officials that you can't do this?
Well, suing them in federal court and getting a federal judgment against them is the best message I know how to send to them. And so we expect to get a prompt decision on our request for a temporary restraining order. And if that comes out, then cities will be on notice all across the country. You try this, you're going to be facing legal consequences for doing it. And so we're going after it. If the churches are being treated equally, okay, no problem. Right. But they're not being treated equally. And when that happens, then it's time to stand up and say, no, you're over the top here.
Well, and I hope they have to pay dearly for this so it sends a message to others that may attempt the same thing. Mike Ferris, thanks so much for the work that you and ADF do, and thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, Mike Ferris with Alliance Defending Freedom. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. Don't go away. We're coming back on the other side of the break with more Washington Watch. Where can young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of real manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of gender confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will help you understand your role as a defender, provider, instructor, battle buddy, and chaplain so that you can have the generational influence God has designed you to have. Learn more at StandCourageous.com.
Recently, a bill called the Fairness for All Act was introduced to the House of Representatives. In response, FRC has a new resource, the Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment's protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. But, unfortunately, it is a poorly drafted bill that would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. Learn more at frc.org/fairnessforall.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast called Lecture Me was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. Hope you had a great weekend. I did. It was a good weekend. Different weekend. I'm actually kind of enjoying some of the, I would say stay at home, but I've not been going to stores or any place. I mean, we had a drive-in service. By the way, here I've got a poll question for you. And this is what I would like to know how you participated in worship this past Sunday, yesterday, Easter Sunday, Resurrection Sunday. Text the word radio to 53445. That's radio to 53445. And here's the question. How did you participate in worship on this Resurrection Sunday? Online, drive-in, TV? Did you do your own family study or some other option? I'd be interested to know. And I'll hopefully, if I get, I'll report the results before we wrap up today. Again, text radio to 53445. That's the word radio to 53445. Let me know how you participated in worship yesterday. As I mentioned, we had I joined with the Central Area Pastors Association and Sound Radio, which airs Washington Watch, and we did a community drive-in service. In fact, I had a little fun with it. I got a short clip of a lot of Baptists here, okay? And it's hard to say amen if you're in your car. You can't hear. You know, it's a little different. And so we had to work out a system for that. Let's play that first clip.
And that's a good place for an amen.
Amen. So the horn took the place of amen. And if you wanted to raise your hands, you had to turn on your flashers. All right. So that's how we did that. Now, we didn't do, you know, we didn't do any of those Jericho victory laps because I didn't want people driving their cars around the parking lot. But it was we had a great time. We had several hundred people came out and we had prayer, read the Bible, read the scripture, and just, you know, we're together. We were separate but together. So we kept to the social distance. Everybody stayed in their cars. But it was really a neat event to see the community come together for that. And, of course, other communities did the same. And joining me now to talk about this and some of the creative ideas that we've seen come forth during this unique and unusual period of time, David Clawson, who is the Director of Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview here at the Family Research Council. David, welcome back.
Great to be with you, Tony.
So, David, what kind of things did we see yesterday popping up around the country?
Oh, we saw all sorts of different, you know, creative ways. It's really interesting. You know, the scripture I've returned to is Hebrews 10:25, which tells us not to neglect to meet together. And under normal circumstances, that means Christians should be meeting in person with other Christians. But this Easter, just like the past four or five Sundays, churches had to think outside the box to still celebrate together, while still abiding by the CDC guidance of social distancing, but to be able to still celebrate Easter in a meaningful way. And we saw all sorts of examples in the United States and around the world. One example I saw was they did communion, the drive-through communion at a military base in Japan, where the chaplains gave out specialized gift bags that contained the elements. The soldiers got in their cars, and then by connecting with a FM radio, they were able to all take communion together. And the one soldier afterwards said it gave him a sense of belonging and togetherness that they longed for. A couple others, they had a worship in Central Park. Franklin Graham and Michael W. Smith hosted a worship service in Central Park right outside the Samaritan's Purse Field Hospital. My own family, I participated in my parents' worship service. They live streamed it. And what was really neat is that pastor had all the different international missionaries that have been deployed by that church send in a short video. Two other things I'll mention, Tony. We saw worship at a raceway in Virginia. You had over 200 people show up at Dominion Speedway, where they had a drive-in theater. And then throughout the country, churches in Texas, South Carolina hosted drive-in theaters for their worship service. One pastor was preaching from a flatbed trailer, and another utilized the jumbo screen. So you just saw across the country pastors thinking outside the box to make sure that they could celebrate Easter, which is the most meaningful day on the calendar for Christians, celebrating the resurrection of Jesus. And they really thought out the box to make sure we could still they could still celebrate this day with their members and congregations.
Yeah, I'm still waiting to see estimates on the numbers, but I think, and I had said this on Friday, I think that more people probably heard the resurrection story, participated in worship on Resurrection Sunday, more did it yesterday than normal, just because of the uniqueness of the times in which we're in and people looking for answers and looking for hope.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think looking back, Tony, we're going to say that this time of separation actually was a time where we were united. We came together. If you think about it, prior to this crisis, I think many of us were really comfortable with our routines. You know, I've grown up in church, served on staff at a church, and, you know, we kind of get comfortable with our programs and the way we run things. But this really has forced pastors and churches to think creatively and outside the boxes. And I think as a result, we're seeing not only the gospel going out in new ways, more people are sharing live streams of gospel worship services than ever before. But I think we're going to see this as a time of growing. I think we're going to look back and think, that, you know, look what God did.
Right. Without question. By the way, folks, let me give out that number again to text radio to 53445, 53445. Text the word radio. I'd like to find out how you engaged in worship yesterday, online, drive-in, TV, family study, however. Text us. Hope to get the results before the end of the program. What I have found, David, is I've talked to pastors across the country that made the adjustment, that did what you said, that thought enacted outside the box, the four walls of the church, that their ministries have actually grown in terms of its reach, but also, and this is what amazed me, it shouldn't have, but it did, that they actually, in terms of the giving that came to that church, has gone up. Well, so many people have made the transition to giving online, and they're comfortable with that. And where you have a church meeting a need, people are willing to sow into that ministry. And so, you know, I would still encourage pastors and churches, look, find a need in your community and think and act outside the box. Meet that need, and you will find that the borders of your ministry will be expanded.
Yeah, that's well said. And if any pastor who's listening to this program or a church member is listening and you're thinking, you know, what are some of these ideas? We've actually compiled these on our website at frc.org/church. And in the bottom left-hand corner, we have a whole tab of stories where people can see what other churches are doing across the country. And our hope is that as you read through those stories, someone will say, you know, I could do that. My church could take meals to nurses and doctors at the hospital. Or we could put on a food drive for people in need in our communities. And so we're hoping that they'll see those things that people are doing and will be inspired to do likewise.
Yeah. In fact, that what we did yesterday at our community services, we took up the offering or the collection for the local food bank to raise money for the food bank to help families in need. One final question for you, David Clawson. Do we ever go back to normal in terms of the way the church does business, or are we forever changed in some ways through this experience?
I think we're going to be forever changed by this. I know just personally, one thing this has taught me is how much I do miss the body of Christ. I miss sitting in that pew. I miss singing the great hymns of the faith shoulder to shoulder with my brothers and sisters. So at least I think for many Christians, we're going to never take these things for granted ever again. And I think this is going to force us to be Great Commission, community-focused like we weren't before. That's what I do hope I see come from this.
Yeah, I agree with that. David Clawson, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
To find out more about the work that David does in our Center for Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. All right, joining me now to continue our conversation here in the final moments we have together, Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs. Kind of going back to the legal aspect of this, Travis is a lawyer, heads up our policy section. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony.
Mike Ferris was on earlier with ADF. And, you know, of course, we're doing a lot. Your shop's doing a lot on this, making sure that, A, in the relief packages, churches were represented. You know, we've been working. We had acting Secretary of Homeland Security on Radio Friday talking about our work in ensuring that pastors, clergy were seen as their work seen as essential in the federal government's guidelines. So we're working on that to make sure that the churches have a voice in this process. When churches are doing exactly what we encourage them to do, to think outside the box, but operate within the guidelines, we want to see this virus contained, minimized, and people kept healthy and safe. But when you have, you know, mayors like the one in Greenville, Mississippi, Mayor Simmons, or you've got the mayor in Louisville, Kentucky, that have taken the actions that they have, we can't shrink back. We can't be intimidated by that. There are certain lines that we have to draw, and we have to say, no, we will not surrender these fundamental freedoms.
Tony, that's totally correct. The churches that David overviewed in terms of how they're adjusting and adapting to this situation nationwide are some of those on the front lines. And many jurisdictions, states, and localities around the country right now are protecting and ensuring that religious liberty is protected for these churches to continue to operate. But others are acting in a problematic fashion when it comes to protecting religious liberty, constitutional and statutory rights. And churches at some point may have to face the decision, do we need to push back against the authorities? We've discussed this before. It can occur from simple engagement with the authorities, simple inquiry. Hey, what have you been doing here? Is this protective of religious liberty? What's your policy? What's your approach? And just clarifying, and that may solve the issue. It may require intervention in the federal courts. In the case of On Fire Christian Center in Louisville, just a few days ago, they had to go to federal court to get a temporary restraining order against the mayor there in Louisville, right, who was enforcing an unconstitutional policy. So it may involve different steps by citizens around the country and all who care about religious liberty pushing back against government overreach.
Yeah, Greg Fisher there in Louisville, Kentucky. Apparently that's not resolved yet, although there was that stay by a federal judge, Judge Walker there. The Justice Department, as we talked about earlier with Mike Ferris, going to announce something tomorrow. In fact, I think we're going to have one of the attorneys from the Department of Justice will be on the radio tomorrow talking about that decision. We also will have the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell will be on radio tomorrow. We'll be talking about this case as well as the importance of the courts for this very reason. But people cannot be intimidated. And that's what concerns me about this, Travis, is that even, you know, in my hometown, you know, Louisiana, next to Mississippi, people had heard about what happened in Mississippi the week before and were fearful that maybe the police were going to write them tickets. Of course, the police were actually at the service in my hometown. They were there because we worked with them. And so it has a chilling effect. And that's why we have to stand up and push back. Again, let me be very, very clear. I'll say this many, many times. We are for the guidelines, and we're encouraging people to stick by the guidelines. But when they do stuff like Mike was describing, the drive-in theater or the drive-in service, sitting in their car, just like somebody down the street at Sonic is sitting in their car eating, one is left alone, the other harassed by the police. We can't tolerate that.
Tony, we can't. As citizens of a country who are charged with governance of our country ultimately and protecting our rights, defending our rights, this is an instance in particular when we need to be on guard to make sure that rights are protected and respected by the government. In my former life, I used to do plaintiff civil rights work, suing the authorities when they overstepped the bounds. And I can tell you that it's an uncomfortable experience for many. They don't want to step into the ring, so to speak, and have to bring a lawsuit, have to push back against the government. But in some cases, a person who's been wronged has to step up and say, this is unacceptable in the United States of America. We have a First Amendment for a reason, and I'm going to defend my First Amendment rights in the public square, in the courts, if necessary. So there are attorneys out there willing to take these cases to court. We want to know about them. We want to help bring awareness to them and articulate, as you said, the right approach. The right approach is one that says, when, in accordance with our long-established religious liberty law, when the government has a compelling interest, narrowly advanced, with you know, driving a compelling interest, like public health in this instance, broadly speaking, rights can be restricted, but the government, as part of that restriction, cannot target religious entities and let non-religious entities or actions go unchecked. Because what that shows then is they're not actually advancing a compelling interest and tolerating it narrowly. Because if it's legitimate to restrict for public health reasons, you don't need to allow parking lots, drive-by services at secular businesses, in some cases, you know, far more lack of compliance with the CDC guidelines than these drive-in services. So this is what we need to be on guard against and what everyone needs to understand.
All right. Travis Weber, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, folks, out of time. But very quickly, here's the results of our poll. 68% of you watched online. 24% went to a drive-in service. 8% had a family study. And here's what was really interesting. 0 actually watched on television. Very interesting. All right, folks, join us again tomorrow. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is here. I hope you will be as well. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.
Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.